So while those slides are loading, let me introduce our next speaker. Our next speaker is Karen Allen. Karen's an assistant professor in the Department of Nutrition, Dietetics, and Food Sciences at Utah State University. Dr. Allen has taught the following courses: Culinary Basics, Science of Food Preparation, and Food Technology and Health. In addition to the courses she's taught and her research responsibilities, she is also responsible for the development of extension programming to assist small businesses and entrepreneurs with the production and processing of quality foods. So with that, and as soon as we have the, we'll have some slides here momentarily, really welcome Karen Allen to this webinar this morning, and thanks for agreeing to participate in this. And so, well, we're gradually working our way there.
Hi, thank you. As the slides are loading, I just want to point out, just to throw one more definition of local in. Recently, the Food Safety Modernization Act, we have several pieces of that legislation that have been finalized, and the official FDA definition of local is now 275 miles. Or within the same state. So it's continuing to be muddled what exactly those definitions are. So I will get started with this. Food safety can be a really tough topic to cover in such a short amount of time. So I am going to move through this fairly quickly, but I do have some resources available for you if you have additional questions. So when we talk about value-added foods, one of the most simple ways to define that in some sources is to look at if it's local, if it's some type of a marketing term, if it's organic, vine ripened, a specialty crop. But one of the biggest issues with value-added foods is when people actually want to take that raw agricultural commodity and turn it into a shelf-stable, marketable food product, things like jams, pickled vegetables, herbed vinegar. For all of these things, you have to consider what the regulations are that apply to that specific product, what kind of safety issues you will be facing with that product, and what kind of labeling issues are associated with it. The rest of this presentation, I'm really going to focus on some of the regulatory and safety issues, but if you have labeling questions, there are resources available excuse me, through the FDA. So when we talk about produce, where exactly do we draw the line between what is unprocessed versus what is processed? And a big part of this is going to come down to what the requirements are from the FDA in the piece of the Food Safety Modernization Act titled The Standards for the Growing, Harvesting, Packing, and Holding of Produce for Human Consumption. So the FDA has set some very specific requirements. If you are a farm and you are doing under $25,000 in total produce sales, you do not have to keep these specific records and meet some of the other requirements that this piece of legislation requires. However, be aware that additional state regulations through your Department of Agriculture may apply, not only to unprocessed produce registration. In some states, we do have states that require if you are selling certain types of raw agricultural commodities, you have to be registered with them to do that. There may also be additional requirements through that State Department of Agriculture in terms of what types of handling procedures can be applied to certain produce before it falls into their definition of process. If you are processing any type of raw agricultural commodity into a sellable food product, that does have to be done in an inspected kitchen or facility. So depending on where you look for that definition, anything that has been peeled or cut is going to be considered processed food. Washed leaves a bigger question. It depends on whether you are using a culinary water source. According to the Food Safety Modernization Act, if you are simply washing to remove dirt off of, say, a potato without any kind of extreme scrubbing, That is not necessarily considered processed. However, your State Department of Agriculture may take a different view on that and still require that that activity be conducted in a certified kitchen. If you are adding any type of sanitizer or additive to that wash water, immediately then that would be considered a processed product. Other things, and I get this question all the time, are cut leafy greens. If you are meeting the agricultural water quality standards contained in the Food Safety Modernization Act, just simply the process of cutting those greens and putting them in a bag does not render them processed under that specific piece of legislation. However, we see many states where the State Department of Agriculture does require that this type of activity be conducted in an inspected kitchen. And then dehydrated produce. Obviously, the picture there of the apple rings, that's very clearly processed. You have cut and handled that apple in a way that makes it not in its natural state, and then to the point that you're drying it. If it's something that is dried on the vine, if it is dried herbs, depending on which state you are in, those activities may or may not need to be conducted in an inspected kitchen. So it is always best to check with your State Department of Agriculture to determine exactly how those local inspectors are going to expect you to handle those products. So when you're looking at a processing option, if you need to use a certified kitchen, there are a few different options. One of those is to do those activities in a cottage kitchen. Depending on the type of product that you are making, that may be allowed in your state. Most states do have a formalized cottage food rule. This is in a home kitchen where an inspector may come in and actually inspect that home kitchen. You do not have to register with the FDA for this option, but you have very limited processing options in terms of the kinds of foods that can be produced. Other options include certified commercial facilities. This may be a state or county or local health department inspected kitchen. You would have to register with the FDA depending on the level of food sales and if you are conducting those activities on a farm. And you do have to comply with the Food Safety Modernization Act. The last option on this slide that I've listed is to work with a contract packager. That is an established food facility, say, that makes jams or jellies that takes your raw agricultural commodity, your apples, your strawberries, processes them for you for a fee, and then hands that finished bottled, labeled, final product to you. In that case, you would have to register with the FDA, but you would not have to worry about the additional registrations or filings that may be required because the contract packager would handle the majority of those. So I want to point out some of the exemptions that are in place under the Food Safety Modernization Act, specifically for small farms. And this can be found in the current good manufacturing practice, hazard analysis, and risk-based preventative controls for human food portion of that legislation. Specifically, farms with under $1 million in total food sales are exempt from certain record-keeping requirements that are a part of the Food Safety Modernization Act. Excuse me. I'm suffering with seasonal allergies and it's getting kind of scratchy throat. The definition in this piece of legislation of a farm provides specific exemptions for certain on-farm activities. If you start with, for example, a fruit that has a natural pH of 4.6 or below, and that is processed into a jam, those are exempt from this piece of legislation. Your farm would still be held to the produce rule portion of that of the Food Safety Modernization Act, but you would not be required to register as a food facility with the FDA. Your State Department of Agriculture will most likely require that those activities take place in a certified kitchen. In some cases, you may be able to do those types of activities in a cottage kitchen. Be aware that that $1 million limit, that cap, includes the market value of any food that is processed, packed, or held for profit. This is really going to have a large impact on some of our, for example, our community-supported agriculture or CSA programs, other types of co-ops. If you are aggregating or distributing even raw agricultural commodities, that goes towards that $1 million cap, the value of that product that you are handling. So some examples of exempt activities under this piece of legislation include normal harvesting activities. This would include trimming away, say, on a head of lettuce, the dead or dying or dirty outer leaves. You can sift to remove pebbles or extra dirt. For certain types of raw agricultural commodities, they can also be shelled. And again, you can wash them with culinary water. Drying and dehydrating in some cases is exempt, as is packaging and labeling those raw agricultural commodities. So when you are looking at processing a product and you are in a certified kitchen, you need to consider how you're going to keep that product safe. That includes how you're going to clean and sanitize, how you're going to prepare, package, and display that product, and you do need to look at any type of chemical, physical, or biological source of contamination. That can even include sanitizers, for example, in the chemical contaminants category. The Food Safety Modernization Act focuses pretty specifically on the bacterial or biological sources of contamination. And those include bacteria. These are things like salmonella, E. coli, and listeria. We've seen a lot of produce that has been recalled in recent years as a result of contamination with these specific bacteria. It also includes viruses, things like hepatitis A or the Norwalk-type viruses, and fungi. That includes mold and yeast. The nice thing about this last category is those are more of a food quality issue than a food safety issue. But you do still need to prevent or limit the growth of those types of contaminants. So when we look at bacterial growth and survival, there are six different things that can affect whether a bacteria grows or whether it even survives. The three that we mostly focus on from a food processing standpoint include the acidity, the temperature, and the moisture of the product. Acidity can slow the growth of some bacteria, and more importantly, it can prevent the germination of Clostridium botulinum spores. This is the bacteria responsible for botulism poisoning, which can be a very serious and deadly foodborne illness. Things like vinegar, citrus juices, and tomatoes are on the acid side. You can see that red line, anything below that 4.6 cutoff. So you have most of your berries, things like grapes, citrus fruits, are going to be in that on the safe side of that 4.6 pH. Most of our vegetables, things like meat, dairy products, those tend to fall in the unsafe category or low acid foods. Temperature is another way we can limit bacterial growth. This can either be through treating our food product with heat to destroy any living bacteria. It can also be by holding that food product at a low temperature, such as under refrigeration or freezing storage, to prevent the bacteria from growing as quickly. The last aspect that I'm going to talk about is moisture. Specifically, I'm going to talk about water activity. So bacteria have to have water available to grow. Water activity is not a measure of how much moisture or water is actually present in your food. It's a measure of how much is available for those bacteria to use as they grow. When we add things like sugar or salt, we are actually lowering the water activity. Something like a jam or a syrup has a very high water content, but it also has so much sugar added that that water is no longer available to support bacterial growth. We can also remove water when we dry or dehydrate products to lower the water activity. There is a chart in these slides that has some examples of where different types of food products tend to fall on that water activity scale. And again, that important cutoff point is 0.85. This brings us to how the FDA categorizes some of these types of products you may consider processing. Exempt products are bottled and canned things that are refrigerated or frozen or have a water activity below 0.85. This also, we tend to lump in other types of products, even if they're not bottled or canned, that still fit those same requirements. Here you can see the specific portions, the sections of the Code of Federal Regulations that would apply to the processing of those products, and you would need to register as an FDA food processor. And then this slide, we have some examples of different types of exempt products. Some barbecue sauces fall into this category. If it's a recipe or a formulation where you have a lot of sugar or salt added, you're more likely going to be under that exempt category. The next level of regulation is the acid food regulations. These are canned or bottled foods that have a natural pH of 4.6. So they fall on that low side of the pH scale. We also have a subcategory called formulated acid that falls under this same regulatory structure. And that is a food where the majority of the components are low acid. So they are high acid, so they have a low pH. And there are 10% of the products that are low acid, or they have a higher pH. Examples of acid foods would include canned tomato products, vinegar and oil dressings. Typically with a salsa or any type of sauce, there's a higher amount of, say, onions and peppers that fall into that low acid category, and those do not fall into this acid food regulatory structure. The acidified foods is where most of those types of products will fall. There they have a natural pH of greater than 4.6, so for example, the onion or the pepper component, but you add acid and that drops the pH below 4.6 so that that product is safe. This requires that a process authority test your product and write a letter detailing how it can be safely handled. And you do have to register with the FDA as an acidified food processor and submit quarterly filings documenting that you are processing that product correctly. Again, examples include salsa, things like pickled vegetables, mayonnaise, and certain types of vegetable juices. The low-acid food regulations, this is the most highly rated, regulated food category that we're going to talk about. Here we have a natural pH above 4.6, and there is no acid added during the processing. This would include things like canned green beans. This also requires a process authority review your process and approve it. And you, again, have to register as a low-acid food processor and submit quarterly filings showing that you are meeting those processing requirements. And then here's an example, some of the types of things that fall into the low-acid category. So I've gone through that rather quickly. I do want to let you know that there is a more detailed curriculum available at our Diversified Agriculture website. Also, in terms of assistance with the Food Safety Modernization Act rules and how that specifically is going to affect your farm or the types of processing that you're interested in, I recommend that you reach out to your local extension offices. Currently, there is a lot of curriculum being developed at a national and regional level to address some of the issues and questions that we know both farms and food processors will have. And we are in the process of developing that and getting that through extension offices, through other state regulatory agencies to make sure that we're getting that correct and appropriate information for the type of situation you are in. And that's it. That's my last slide.
Okay, Karen, thank you very much. Think about local foods and any discussion of local foods without addressing the food safety issues is really important. It's one of the most important considerations, I think, as we go out and